Norway's royal family is facing its most serious crisis in generations. A high-profile rape trial, a fresh arrest, and intense scrutiny after the revelation of links between the royals and Jeffrey Epstein. And at the centre of all of it is the son of the future queen, the so-called black sheep of the family, a man who insists he is innocent of the most serious charges against him. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. Well, the trial of Marius Borg Holby continues this week in Oslo. And Holby, he is the 29-year-old son of Norway's Crown Princess Mette Marit. He's pleaded not guilty to four counts of rape and a series of other offences, but he has admitted to a number of lesser charges. But what has intensified public scrutiny is timing. On the eve of his trial, Holby was arrested again, and this time on suspicion of assault, making threats with a knife, and breaching a restraining order. He is now being held on remand while the trial continues. And all of this is unfolding against a separate controversy engulfing his mother, the future Queen of Norway. The latest release of Epstein files detailed extensive contact between the princess and the American sex offender after his conviction. They're very separate, and they are distinct matters for sure, but they've placed Norway's royal family at the centre of public scandal and drama. To help us understand what's been happening and how it's playing out in Norway, I'm joined now from Tromsø by journalist Lars Bevangeir. Lars, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thank you very much.
Lars, I know a lot of people here in Ireland are familiar with the royal family in the UK. It's probably the royal family that we think of immediately. And we know that this is a family that has been surrounded in controversy and drama over the years. We're possibly not as familiar with the Norwegian royal family, unless, of course, you know, you're regular purchasers of Hello magazine. So maybe we will start there, because I think the background to this man's life is absolutely fascinating. Let's start with Mette Marit and when she first, I suppose, met Prince Haakon back in 1996. Can we go from there?
Yes. So it was a bit of a fairy tale romance. She, a commoner from the south of Norway, he obviously the future king, and he was already crown prince then. His father, the king, was already a relatively old. He's now 88, so we're looking at a change of the crown in not too long, to be honest. But they met and they became a couple, and everybody was very pleased for him because he's always been a very popular figure himself, and people also took to her very quickly. Now, she already had a child from a previous relationship, and that child was Marius Borg Holby. He was only four at this time, and they decided to include him in their family very publicly from the get-go because they wanted him to be part of their family, even though it was a very special family, being royals. What this meant for him, of course, is that he has grown up in the media spotlight, although they have tried to shield him as best they can. But he has been scrutinized all through his growing up years. And that is also something he's now using, if you like, in court, saying he has been under immense pressure growing up, coming from a very normal background and then suddenly being thrust into the limelight like this.
And as you say, it was this fairy tale meeting, wasn't it? She was 22 years of age. She was a waitress. She was a commoner. And they met at a music festival, I read, in southern Norway back in July in 1996. I think Nick Caves was the headliner at the time. She was actually 3 months pregnant when she first met him. I think they had a brief summer romance. They went their separate ways, but they met again 3 years later at the same festival and they got together and that was it.
That was it. And it soon became public knowledge, of course, like these things go. There were photographers following him around and then spotted him with her. And quite soon they came out and said, yes, we are a couple and we want to remain a couple. And it was quite a whirlwind romance. And they were married in 2001. And I remember that very vividly. There was a sense of celebration. You know, people were out in the streets. There was fireworks that I remember very vividly in Oslo that evening of their wedding, because there were fireworks they managed to make into pink hearts on the sky. So everyone was sort of jubilant and having parties around this. Since then, obviously, a lot of things have happened. And the mood has definitely changed.
And as you say, she was a commoner, she had a child, but she did manage to win over his family, and it appeared to win over the country. And I actually even recall that wedding photograph as somebody who always loved watching royal weddings as a young child. And it was him and her, and she's beautiful in her dress. And then there is this real cherub faced, blondie-haired little four-year-old boy in his mini tux at the wedding. He was very much part of the family. They did go on to have two more children. They are obviously royals. He's not. Tell me about that aspect of this story. He grew up in privilege, but he's not really recognised as royal. He's no royal title. He's no royal role.
He is part of the family, but he's not a royal, that's correct. So he has no title, and this is basically just constitutional. He came in as a child from a previous relationship, and to be a royal, you have to be born from the royals. So yes, correct, they had two further children together, and they are both in line to the throne. The oldest, Princess Ingrid Alexandra, is the second in line to the throne now after her father, Crown Prince Haakon. So yes, he did indeed grow up in a royal family, but he's not a royal himself.
So did his upbringing then differ, I suppose, from that of his half-siblings?
Well, his parents have always said that they've tried to include him as just another child and not to differ between the three of them at all when it comes to how they've been brought up. But of course, his younger siblings are being groomed to become royals in adult life, and Ingrid Alexandra obviously is being taught, if you like, how to become queen one day. So in that respect, their upbringing has been very, very different. And of course, since they've all become adults, their life paths, if you like, have taken very different directions. And this is very much down to the fact that the two younger siblings are royals and he is not. Now, he has always been trying to not avoid the limelight so much, maybe, because he has seem to be courting, the rich and famous in Norway, and his friendship group has always been quite a few people who are already celebrities in their own rights. Mm-hmm. But he's been at pains to say that I don't want to be a public figure. I want to just get on with my life. And he claims that he's always been hounded by the media, as he puts it, from age four when he came into the royal family.
I came to know about the royal family in Norway through this documentary that's on Netflix called Rebel Royals. It's pretty bizarre, and it tells the story of Prince Haakon's sister, Princess Märtha Louise.
Well, as much as he, Crown Prince Haakon Magnus, has been sort of a very popular prince growing up, she has always been more controversial. So she... and again, they both obviously grew up in the glare of the media from the get-go. She was a bit more of a rebellious teenager. She then started dabbling in very alternative theories. She once ran a so-called angel school where she professed to be able to teach people to talk to angels. So she's been, if not hounded, she's been ridiculed quite a bit in the media. She has been talking out against the media herself a little bit, like Marius Høiby. But she married this American self-professed shaman, Derek Verdurek, in Norway last year. And as part of this whole romance, they've had a Netflix documentary team with them, and that documentary came out last year, as you said you'd watched it. And it is quite bizarre and very alternative. But right now, to be honest, her antics look quite amusing and almost charming compared to the real trouble the rest of the family is in right now.
Okay, let's look, I suppose, to the court case now that has really dominated headlines in the past week. What is Marius Borrocholmi now charged with, and which of the charges is he contesting? Because there are many of them.
So, yes, he is facing a total of 38 charges, and these vary from traffic offences all the way up to the four most serious ones, which are all alleged rape. Now, what we've been hearing in the first days, in this first week of the trial, is one of the first witnesses or the first victims of one of these alleged rapes. Now, all four of these are with different women, and they are all so-called, what Norwegians called sleeping rapes. So the allegation is that all these four women have been intoxicated or asleep or otherwise incapable of knowing what was going on while he has sexually assaulted them. The first witness spoke about her shock when she was called in for a police interview, and the police showed her a video that Marius had taken himself of this alleged rape. And she was shocked to see it because she can't remember any of it, she says. And she says, looking at herself in that video, I look like I am dead. It doesn't even look like I'm breathing. Now, Marius himself alleges that all four have had consensual sex with him before these alleged rapes. And he also says that all the alleged rapes were not that, but they were consensual. So what the court will have to decide is who to believe, basically. Because when there are two people in a room and there's a word against word, you just have to, the court will have to listen to both sides and then try to figure out who to believe.
And the moment, I suppose, that led to all of this, to led to this trial, was this phone call back in August 4th, 2024, from an apartment in a very, I understand, wealthy area of Norway where there was a domestic incident and an allegation of assault between Marius and his partner on the night. Can you tell me about that?
That's correct. And this is when it first really hit the media here in Norway. She alleges that he was physically violent with her, choking her. There were damages to the apartment. When the police came, there was a chandelier that was smashed on the floor, amongst other things. He was basically then charged with assault. And that was the first thing that started this ball rolling. And after that, the police started looking through his phones, his computers, and started finding these videos that I was talking about earlier. And that is how this case has just grown and grown. And in the end, we're now looking at these 38 different charges against him.
Okay, so subsequent to that incident back in August, which I think he has admitted to, a number of other women came forward with similar allegations.
But yes and no. Some have come forward. Some have been contacted by police because of what the police have found on Marius Hobie's phones. Some of them, the first one that has been witnesses, as I said, was not aware of having been a victim of a crime at all before she actually was presented with this video. So she told the court that when the police called her in for an interview, she thought it would be something about Marius Hobie because she knows him, and that she knew about the charges against him relating to this first incident in 2024. So she had no idea that the interview was actually going to be about her being allegedly assaulted sexually.
He did put out this statement right back in August 2024, where he said he suffered from mental troubles. He'd struggled for a long time with substance abuse, which I think was well known within Norway, and that during that August altercation, he was under the influence of alcohol and cocaine. He then took to the stand himself last week, and he spoke at length, I suppose, and was questioned and cross-examined at length about the allegations against him, about his upbringing, about his substance abuse, about his mental health. Bring us through exactly what he said.
Yes, he was very adamant that a lot of his troubles have been caused by the way he grew up in the media spotlight. And he has said that, yes, he has had substance abuse issues and mental health issues, and all this all stems from that experience, he claims. Now, of course, in a court of law, there's absolutely no defense of claiming that you were high on drugs or alcohol at the time of an alleged crime. So he will be treated as if he was completely aware of what he was doing at the time. But he has definitely been trying to get across the way he feels he has been hounded, in his own word, by the Norwegian media and the international media. There's a huge focus on the royal family and him from other countries as well, notably Germany, where they have, for some reason, a huge interest in the Norwegian royals. So he's making this, it would look like so far anyway in this court case, to a part of his defense. And we'll just have to wait and see what the court makes of that.
So I know his parents, right, have said they're not going to be attending the trial. They're not going to be there supporting him in the public gallery. But part of the reason perhaps that they're not going to be there is because of the Crown Princess's own health issues. She is awaiting a lung transplant and she is not very well. And on top of that is then embroiled in this Epstein controversy.
That's correct. And I mean, part of the reason why they feel they cannot be present in court is constitutional as well. Obviously, there has to be very watertight shields between the monarchy and the courts and the political Norway as well. But yes, she's very ill. And now in the latest file dump in the Epstein saga, she has come out for the worse. She basically talked about her contacts with him back in 2019 when she talked about him more as an acquaintance that she had met on a couple of occasions in sort of a public capacity. But now there's thousands of emails between the two of them that suggest a much more personal relationship. She talks about him tickling her brain and him being her crazy friends and things like this. And we also now know that she's actually spent 4 days at Epstein's Florida mansion. So a lot of people in Norway are very upset and disappointed with the fact that she didn't come clean with everything back in 2019 when it was first on the agenda, and that only now when these documents have come out, she has come more clean. We still don't know whether this is it now or whether more will come out as the media pour over these millions of documents. But she has, again, apologized and says she's embarrassed about it. The support in her and the sympathy perhaps she has had because of her son and also her lung disease has dwindled. And there's a recent poll now where 4 in 10 Norwegians say she should not become queen.
I mean, the princess continued to email Jeffrey Epstein after his 2008 conviction, which is going to make people deeply, deeply uncomfortable. And the tone, the character of the messages, it's almost flirty.
Certainly a very personal nature, the contents in these emails. And obviously, it's very difficult to read into it exactly what kind of relationship they had. But it does come across as if she was quite taken by his generosity. Obviously, he's been generous to a lot of people, and that's why so many people are in troubled waters right now. But yes, it definitely shines the light on the relationship being far more personal than she had admitted before.
What about Prince Haakon himself? I mean, he has come before the press, hasn't he, to profess his love for his stepson, to say he's an important part of our family, but to say, I suppose, that it is really important that he faces the full rigours of the law, the full rigours of the criminal justice system. Is there sympathy for him here?
Crown Prince Haakon Magnus has always been a very, very popular figure. So has his father, the king. He has always composed himself very properly. He's been seen as sort of the perfect heir to the throne. He's courteous, he's sympathetic, and so far there has been nothing to suggest that he knew much about the Epstein contacts. He's obviously been, to his best of his ability, a father for Marius Borg Hobey as best as he could, and he's been quite open in the past as well about the challenges they've had as a family, as any family would have with a child who is struggling with substance abuse. So his popularity does not seem to have waned. However, the popularity of the monarchy and the entire royal family has dropped quite a bit. There used to be sort of steady 70% support for the monarchy in Norway. A recent poll showed that had dropped by about 10 percentage point down to 60. So obviously this saga is not over at all yet, but his own reputation so far looks to be still pretty rock solid.
Yeah, and I know he did say at the time, it's clear we think a lot about those affected in the case. I know many of you are having a hard time right now, so I'm sure that was important that that aspect of this case was acknowledged. The trial is expected to run for a number of weeks. Will we hear from any of the alleged victims, or what are we expecting next, yes. Lars?
Yes, we are. So we've already, as I said, heard from the first of the four victims who the alleged rape allegations concern. We will hear from all of them. We'll also hear from two further former partners of Hobey, where the charges are about assault. We will also hear a lot from their friends and family in support of them. There will also be quite a bit later on, in a few weeks from now, some fairly famous people, influencers mainly, who will be taking the stand, because the circle of friends that Marius Borg Hobey has includes quite a lot of sort of the modern day celebrities in terms of models and influencers. So there will be a lot of interest around that as well. But of course, the most important thing will be for the court to examine all the possible and available evidence, of which there is quite a lot, since he has been filming and documenting a lot of what has been going on himself on his own mobile phone.
All right, Lars Bevanger, thank you so much for taking time to speak to us here on News Talk Daily.
You're welcome.
That's it from the podcast for today. It's been great having your company as always. You know, you'll find us every day on the Go Loud Player and at newstalk.com. And if you get a chance, do give us a like or a rating. We always appreciate your feedback. Until tomorrow, from me, Ciara Doherty. Take care.